Where it's Thank you. So, good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me in the back, John? Okay, good. Good. So yesterday it was really cold weather, and today it's the rain. Folks from Mann Library here? Any folks? Did you take the tunnel?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know. When I heard about that, I was going to give everyone a gold star yesterday for coming, except for the Mann folks, because they came through the tunnel, not the cold. And I believe we have some folks from Weill Cornell Med on the phone as well, joining us. I think I heard a yes. So, at any rate, welcome everybody. Welcome to the new year and soon the new semester. And I think the January sessions for all staff is a good time to kind of take pause, look at where we have been, what the sort of challenges and opportunities are that face us in this new year, but also it's a time for us to kind of experiment. And so if you read Take One yesterday, I'm just going to really talk about four, I'm going to talk after I introduce staff, I'm just going to talk about four things and pause at the end of each one of those to try and engage with you in some questions to generate some discussion and commentary. But first, we have some new staff, and I met with some of them last week, and it was really wonderful to hear from them, hear their enthusiasm for being here, and the interesting backgrounds they come from. And I know a number of them came yesterday, but I just want to acknowledge that Bill Cowdery is becoming the night and weekend public services assistant at the Music Library. Wendy Kozlowski has joined us as the scientific data curation specialist, working in library technical services. Kim Lane has joined OKU Circulation. I believe she works at night. Mary Schoenfelder has joined the Preservation and Conservation Unit as a preservation assistant. And I believe Marcia Teichman is here. Marcia, you want to stand up so we can all acknowledge you? Marcia is the new Visual Resources Librarian at the Fine Arts Library. So welcome, Marcia. And then Jill Wilson came yesterday, unless she came back for an encore, is the new Public Services Assistant in Engineering, Math, and Physical Sciences Library. So it's, and they're all smiling in these pictures. That's great. So the four topics that I want to cover include where we are in terms of moving forward, our really quite bold and visionary strategic plan through the 10 priority objectives we've identified for this year and next, to bring you up to date on phase two of Too Cool, to talk about this, you know, this a new interesting beast called the New York Tech Campus we learned about in December that Cornell had won, and then to look at the, revisit the staff survey results and think about implications and actions that might take place in the library and result of that survey. So, priority one of the strategic, actually the first two priorities really focus on collections. And the first one is stake in the ground to look at how we can return Cornell to the top 10 among research libraries, academic research libraries in North America in terms of our collection support. The university strategic plan calls for a university library among the top 10 in key measures. And in many ways, a real important litmus test of the measure of the greatness of a university library, in addition to its staff, is the collections that it is able to make available to faculty, staff, and students. A little bit of background here. You know, we have a really incredibly rich collection here. It's been built over a century and a half through special collectors, through the good work of bibliographers and curators and selectors, distinguished faculty and others who have lent their time and attention to building this collection. Over the last 10 years or so, however, we have started to slip, and it has taken some time for that to become palpably evident, and it's the most evident in terms of those ARL statistics. So with the good work of the Research and Communication Department, we really honed in on materials expenditures as a measure of collection strengths and compared it against the top research libraries in North America that are situated at universities. In 2005, we were ranked number 8. Last year, for ARL statistics, which is fiscal 9-10, we had slipped to number 19. And projections are, if we continue in this trajectory, we will slip out of the top 30 altogether if we don't do something to address this issue. Why is it so that we're having so much difficulty keeping pace? Any of you, I think it might be a conflict of interest, but if you own stock in Elsevier, your retirement portfolio might look pretty good. They have, in addition to other major publishers, returned to their stockholders very healthy returns every year based on the above inflationary price increases that they have foisted upon research universities for the last decade plus. In addition to that, the budgetary crisis, particularly as it hit Cornell University, was pretty profound from 2008-2009 through really last year. And, you know, we've got a little bit ways to go still in that. But what it meant was that in living memory, the collections budget not only was not increased, but one year it was actually decreased. And being able to hold it harmless from cuts meant that we were cutting deeper in other parts of the library's budget. Because we are a comprehensive research library in many ways, we have a strong commitment to global resources. And so not only do we have to worry about collecting and identifying that material and cataloging it and making it available, but also the devaluation of the American dollar against other currencies has had a profound impact. Japanese materials in the last 5 years, our purchasing power has dropped by about 40% based on these factors. And with the National Resource Center funding in jeopardy, which has funded a lot of our collections support, that will probably rise up to something like 47% of the purchasing power decline over the last 5 years. That's going to show quickly the diminution of our collections. So we have developed as a priority objective to really change this and move forward in a way to bring us back into that really elite cadre of research libraries. So we have a fourfold plan. The first is that with the provost's urging, we have redirected reserves, which really is a euphemism for funds that we have held and committed, at least in our minds, to other things that the library needs. But nonetheless, for the next 3 years, we are redirecting $5.8 million to the collections budget. Ongoing by year three, that'll be about $500,000 every year. So beyond the 3 years, that will continue. And the remainder of those funds will be one time. And roughly, those are being divided, at least initially, between the special collections, looking at the just incredible photographic collection that Stephen Lowenthal has amassed over the last couple of decades. If you have not seen the sort of greatest hits from that collection, they're on display in the Kroc display space. Through what time, Elaine? How long will that be up?
Through the end of May.
End of May. Okay, so you've got this semester to go take a look at it. It's pretty breathtaking. And then the rest has gone to John Saylor and his colleagues who have developed wish lists from working closely with faculty. I can tell you that their wish list exceeds the amount of money that we have put aside, but nonetheless, it does show that there are our needs not being met. We have also, with the provost's blessing, adopted a campaign within the campaign. Our campaign for the library is at $60 million. We're at about 63% of that at this point, and $15 million of the remaining amount will be dedicated to collections. This is receiving the highest priority in alumni affairs and development with the provost's blessing, and even more critical, which is the third part of that fourfold strategy, the deans of the respective schools and colleges are owning half of that challenge. So $7.5 million needs to be raised by us, and another $7.5 million by the respective deans. We're working closely with them. Jennifer Sawyer and I have been working with them and the principal and major gift officers in identifying prospects for that. And the final strategy in that fourfold prong is to really convince the university that for us to close the gap is one thing. For us to continue to remain competitive, we need annual increases on a fairly steady basis, either through appropriations from the respective deans and provosts, or through a much more aggressive campaign annual giving, which is not sustainable in terms of the gap that has developed. So, in terms of focusing on the campaign, there was a boot camp held for unit library directors and others, a pilot, last Monday, to sort of learn how to hone the message, to identify prospects and work closely with them in defining compelling proposals that they will find worthy of funding. I also met with the executive committee of the emeritus faculty to speak about this campaign, and they're very interested in kind of partnering with us. Mel Nesheim is the incoming chair of that committee. He's the former provost at Cornell, and so Jennifer and I will be meeting with him in the next week or two to go over a kind of strategy that will bring support. The Library Advisory Council is also kicking into higher gear in terms of development, and working with Charlie Flager and others in AAD, we're looking at very high-profile co-chairs, so this is a watch this space here. I and Lee Cartmill are the leads on this. We are working with Colleen Cuddy at Weill, Erla Haynes, and Jennifer Sawyer, and of course John Saylor. The second priority objective that really focuses on collections is a recognition that even with a return to the top 10 for Cornell in terms of collection support, it's insufficient to bring to faculty and staff and students the collective scholarly output of the world. And so working in partnerships, we want to move beyond sharing of collections to shared collection building, first through our Too Cool partnership, but also through Borrow Direct Consortium and in other opportunities as they present themselves to provide that access. I think our focus in the past has been on what can we amass locally, and then in another phase we looked at how do we compare with other institutions in terms of coverage. And really at the heart of this one is to say, what is the world of scholarly resources out there, and how do we bridge the delta between what we can collectively acquire and the full range of scholarly resources that will be essential to faculty and students at all of these campuses. So there is a team led by John Saylor, including Femi Cadmus, Rich Antlick, Bill Kara, Kaiser Walker, and Mark Funk, who are looking at defining, you know, what is a collection of record, where are the opportunities to build on those one-offs that are already in play. So for instance, the Borrow Direct Music librarians have done a pretty fabulous job of trying to look at the nature of leading musicians, isn't that right, Bonna? And
right,
identifying
currently living composers.
Right. Similarly, we've worked with Princeton on German literature. Certainly with Columbia, Latin American holdings, we're looking at South Asian materials more collectively. But all of these are individual one-offs, and how do we look at a broader concept of what it will take to provide that collective collection? The third objective moves now on, we're working on the collections now, how do we provide access to it? In a way that is not only enduring, but endearing, and a lot of library access to resources may be comprehensive, but extremely complicated. We recognize this. We hear loud and clear from our faculty and students in various venues about things. And so this team has been working hard to look at ways to enhance and integrate discovery services. A couple of major accomplishments. We moved to a new link resolver, 360 link, to improve the full text linking from our catalog. And just yesterday, we did a general release of Summon to the community. It's going to be interesting to see the kind of reactions we get, because over this, the rest of this semester, we'll be looking at publicity, troubleshooting, listening to our users about what they like, what they don't like. And then this group is also working on the next step, which is to identify the sort of functional requirements for managing our local resources much more effectively. So this, again, is a watch this space. This is a cast of thousands that have been working on this, and I'm really pleased by what they've been able to do so far. Jim LeBlanc and Deb Schmidley are the coordinators for the Discovery and Access team. And there are a number of implementation teams. The Summon team is led by Jesse Konecki with Matt Connolly, Jeremy Cusker, Michael Engel, and Tracy Snyder. The user experience co-chairs are Sarah Wright and Mary Beth Martini-Lyons, with Ken Bolton, Michael Cook, Tony Cosgrave, Jason Kavari, and Michael Wood from Weil. And the integration layer team, Simeon Warner, is chairing that with John Porson-Reichert, Diane Dietrich, Keith Jennings, Dean Kraft, Myra Murray from Weil, and Rick Salterra and Glenn Wiley. So, some of these objectives are more fully developed than others because things were in play as we identified our priorities. Certainly the notion of the objective four, which is to look at the liaison structure to departments and academic programs, has been in play for some time. But this objective is to really identify what sort of liaison activities and responsibilities ought to be under that umbrella of interaction, beyond the sort of general reference and beyond the collection building requirements. And so part of the activities of this group have really been looking at, you know, what's best of breed, both in other research settings, but also what has happened here at Cornell that can help us to identify kind of an ideal model program. Looking at ensuring that we have liaison structure in place for all of the departments and programs and institutes and centers. Looking at how to document this activity and measure its success. This is easier said than done. But I think that this group is in capable hands, led by Cornelia Tancheva and Kathy Chang. The team includes Virginia Cole, Dan McKee, Fiona Patrick, Patrizia Sioni, Jill Wilson, and Drew White from Weil. Objective five. More on partnering. Partnering is kind of a key theme across all of these objectives, really. And this time it's to look at, as we move more to embrace the broad scholarly communication continuum, how do we develop sustainable models for some of that activity? I think we've had some very successful projects underway for some time. I'm really pleased that Project Euclid, which is a partnership between Cornell Library and Duke Press to provide publication support capabilities to independent and scholarly journals in mathematics and statistics is solidly in the black. And really, we had a bumper year in terms of bringing in more journals and also bringing in new customers for it. Similarly, the partnership with Cornell University Press, which Kaiser has been our lead on in terms of the German monograph series Signale, while not totally there, is certainly very conscious of looking at the economic sustainability of a joint publication by the press and the library with a limited print run and digital access and a moving wall kind of model in an important but relatively small area that is falling below the economic radar of most university presses. And I'm very pleased that Peter LePage from the Dean of Arts and Sciences has seen this as an important initiative and is providing some key support. This team is looking at such models and also looking at defining measures of success, building a framework for planning and developing not only current efforts but future efforts as we look at taking on larger chunks of the communication cycle. And I want to really focus a lot of attention and praise in the archive business model effort that's going on right now. Under the direction of Oya Rieger, with David Ruddy and Simeon Warner and Lee Cartmill and many others playing a key role. We have moved from total support by the library system to a partnership with leading research institutions and research labs around the world in a kind of an NPR model of voluntary support. But more significantly, this past summer, the Simons Foundation has provided pilot funding to help us broaden a governance and accountability process to see this as a shared public good in this key area. And we will be holding two meetings with key stakeholders. One will be with North American University Libraries and Research Centers at the end of this month in New York City. And then the second one will be held in February with members from Europe and Asia attending. Our goal is by June we will have secured significant funding from Simon Foundation in five-year chunks as matching grant to support its ongoing viability. So the team that's working on Objective 5 is led by David Ruddy. It also includes Tammy Magnus, Chris Manley, Neely Tang, and Colleen Cuddy from WIAC. Objective 6, to build an information literacy program to achieve college learning outcomes. I think if there is one key theme to this objective, it is partnership. As you look at the activities that are underway now, partnership with the Center for Teaching Excellence in Course Design Institute for May, partnering with Academic Technologies in the production of a webinar, partnering with and establishing relationships in that core assessment committee for the university that has come out of our reaccreditation process with a heavy emphasis on assessment. Working with instruction coordinators to recruit departments for pilot programs. And I think in kind of a coup, we'll be bringing the ACRL immersion to Cornell for the first ever institute for instructor development in May. And just this week, there are some related activities. The team is partnering with the Center for Teaching Excellence in a faculty forum program to consider the sources, better research for better student papers on the 19th. And starting yesterday was a graduate student's PhD in the humanities program, immersion program that the library has partnered with a couple of other leaders on campus We had planned for 15 graduate students, and we are taking 18, but we had to turn down a number of those. And Cornelia Tencheva and Virginia Cole and a number of others are working on that. And I understand that in other developments, we'll be looking at a model, a similar kind of model for undergraduate research, which is becoming a larger and larger concern. I forgot to tell you who was on that information literacy. It's being led by Mary Oakes with Camille Andrews, Gabby Gessner, Lance Heidig, Chris Miller, Tom Mills, and Jaron Porcello? Jaron Porcello, sorry. Okay, objective 7. You know, as our future becomes more digital, as the production, the scholarly communication cycle moves, you know, more fulsomely into a all-digital environment, and increasingly our materials budget and our work is centered on digital services and digital access to materials, being able to take the library to the users wherever they are, whether they're in person in the libraries themselves or through virtual services, becomes an increasingly important thing. So this team has focused on, again, you know, what's the lay of the land, what are some good best practices out there, what is it that faculty and students really want in an online environment to support their work. We'll be conducting some focus groups in the spring. And two key things that, in terms of deliverables, we hear over and over again from faculty that nothing substitutes for the physical shelf browsing. And so work has been underway in developing alternative virtual shelf browsing capabilities. And the team promises that we'll have one by fall of 2012. And another thing that's come out of this work, principally in the science domain, is to, on these virtual library websites, is to provide heavily curated lists of resources that are specific in those domains. Steve Rocky and Holly Misselbauer are the leads, with Ken Bolton, Diane Delgado from Weill, Jim Del Rosso, Greg Green, Marty Schlabach, Leah Sola, and Glenn Wiley participating in this activity. Priority 8, more partnerships to strengthen this time the research and environment and enhance opportunities for researchers both nationally and globally. Sheen Lee has characterized research libraries in the 21st century as nodes in a complex integrated information research environment, and I think that's true, that the days are limited for one research library, one research institution being sufficient. And so we seek partnerships that will expand our capabilities to meet the academic needs here at Cornell and to gain advantage for our faculty and students both elsewhere and particularly abroad. And so we've looked at some key partnerships that have been in development, most notably Too Cool, but also the work that's underway in China, principally with Tsinghua, but increasingly with Beida, Peking University. And so this group is looking at what goes into partnerships. And it may be partnerships, which is to fulfill our land grant mission. I think about Mann Library's work in bringing agricultural material to underdeveloped areas of the world and to provide information and library training in Africa. So as we think about those kinds of partnerships and expansion, what accrues to Cornell? What does it do to help us? And what are some of the sort of do's and don'ts and best practices that should guide that work and help us assess their value? The leads for this are Sheen Lee, who I think has been cutting her eye teeth in the Far East for us in partnerships, and also Curtis Lyons, and John Corson-Reichert, Colleen Cuddy, Tammy Magnus, Daniel Miracle, Gail Steinhardt, Ed Weissman, and Liren Zheng are participating in this one. Objective 9 and 10 both deal with staff-related activities. Objective 9 really is looking at competencies for all library positions. You know, what is building a competency library going to mean in the future, particularly as we pay special attention to the emerging needs that are being brought about by, you know, technical challenges that we're facing, these multi-institutional kinds of activities, increasing specialization in areas that we, you know, hadn't imagined 20 years ago. And while the team will be focusing on such things as the competencies for communication and teamwork, it really is looking at the core competencies that we need to develop in-house currently, and as we go out to hire new staff, what do we need to bring into Cornell to continue to see clearly about opportunities and challenges that we face. So their deliverable is to really look at an action plan over this this next year to help us in this area. And, you know, some of those issues around job descriptions and performance evaluation are already creeping into a number of the other objectives. So we need to do some kind of matching across these priority objectives. This team is being led by Linda Bryan with Bonna Betcher, Angela Horn, Pam Stansberry, Sandy Dimitri, and Lindsay Prignon working on it. So if priority 9 was really more in the competency area and the sort of training that is requisite and new recruiting requirements, priority 10 focuses on the flip side. What's the environment, the communication, the policy, the plans, the practice environment in which all of this kind of plays out in terms of making Cornell Library a competency library. So that team is being led by Deb Landines and Sandy Dimitri, with Linda Bryan on the team, including Brenda Marston, Boaz Nadavmanes, Michelle Payillo, Lindsay, Howard Raskin, and Juja Colte. Okay, so with that brush stroke in mind of the 10 objectives, by the way, there were 50 that we winnowed down to 10, and we also felt pretty strongly that we wanted to cover the, you know, kind of a broad gamut of what our aspirations were with the strategic plan moving us toward 2015. I want to get a sense from you as we move forward in terms of defining priorities for work and involvement of staff. Are 10 priority objectives about the right number? Are there too many, too few? What else would, you know, is glaringly missing from your perspective that we should be thinking about? And based on that, do all of these add up to something that is going to position the library strategically over the next 3 to 5 years? And finally, how do you keep engaged in the process that is motivating so many of us in terms of communication and involvement, finding your place in terms of the strategic goals and objectives that we have? So this is just a first attempt, and we'll keep practicing with lots of other different ways of communicating and securing your input in things that are really near and dear to many of us as we're moving this library forward. So I'd like to just open this up to any questions or comments based on what I said about the 10 objectives or specifically these questions. This is always the hard part. Yes?
Question about the...
Can you stand up and shout?
The standards that the... you know, what we're measuring, being measured by as far as be moving back to the top 10. Now, the constituents of that organization, is there an attempt to redefine how that's found? Because, you know, if we have, if number one has X amount of resources, but they only use 80% of that,
yeah.
They're still number one, but 20% is waste.
Yeah.
And also with collaborations, like with Colombia, for example, are they now on par with us for Southeast Asia holdings? And does that affect the ratings?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's something that I've kind of been banging my head against the wall in ARL about. ARL is really good at measuring things that are easy to measure. And they have, for the last 4 or 5 years, really focused on this this measurement, which bundles up the number of staff, the size of your collections, and the budgets that you are spending. It's not based on, you know, how effective you are meeting the needs of your specific campus. It's not how you are doing things differently to achieve savings and redirect funds to emerging needs. But much more in how you're spending your money and what percent of the pie are you getting. And while this last year there's been an attempt on the part of ARL to sort of reassess the kind of measurements that they are taking, they've pared them down, but they really haven't done a good job of coming to terms with really hard things to measure. How do you measure effectively the impact of library resources on academic productivity on the part of faculty members, on the recruitment and retention of stars, on the completion rates for undergraduates, on securing jobs for doctorate students, all of those kinds of things that are key challenges for research universities moving forward are just not on their horizon. I don't know if Juzho or Linda are here and wish to make any more comments about this issue. Have I characterized it relatively fairly, Linda? Can you stand up so people can hear you? There was an attempt a year or two ago to do a qualitative assessment of what you're being involved with. And so there was sort of a narrative that was put together for all these research libraries. And in fact, the first few informed those other reports that were being generated. And if you read them individually, it looks like, you know, we invented water and we invented electricity and everything else. You know, it was more a, aren't we grand and great in terms of bragging rights rather than, I think, providing a real qualitative assessment, which it was aimed at getting at. So this remains a tough thing. I do believe if you look at Columbia and Cornell together as one institution, which we are not doing, but if we were to do that, we would be at the top, ahead of Harvard, for all of the funds that they have there. So, but it's definitely something that's, you know, in my consciousness as those measures are not keeping pace with what is happening out in the library world. Other questions or comments or observations around this, the priority objectives that have been identified? Corrections to sort of my quick sweep through them? David?
Well, sort of along the same.
Can you stand up, David?
Sort of along the same lines. I mean, from what I've heard, and this could be inaccurate, that a lot of the institutions that moved from 2005 to 2010 ahead of us in these rankings had significant support from their universities.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, what's your sense of the relationship here between the libraries and the universities, mm-hmm. in terms of getting more resources, mm-hmm. and your prognosis? mm-hmm. forward as mm-hmm. we hopefully out of a mm-hmm. recession recovery.
Right. I've been making that case very strongly that these are interim measures we are putting in play. They do not solve the problem. And the provost has so much has indicated he hears me. The faculty are pretty active in stating their concerns in this area, but it awaits our being able to close that budgetary deficit gap, which should happen in the next year or two. And then it should start to augment again. But we, there's no guarantee of it. We may be in constant sort of catch-up mode. But the other thing is we don't know where people are going to fall in this the numbers race. I think that Cornell was hit harder earlier than many of our peer institutions, particularly some of the state institutions, and we may see those that have surpassed us starting to also have difficulties in making those commitments. Gail, you had a question or a comment.
So the third question, I'm wondering if teams will consider some more interactive way of presenting their findings. I mean, first quarter might be too soon, quarterly might be too often, mm-hmm. but I bet most people won't be motivated to go and read every report after every quarter.
No. So what suggestions do you have about communication?
Maybe an occasional brown bag or something, mm-hmm. especially for teams who might be seeking really broad-based input.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea. I think that the idea of, these are brainstorming sessions. We've made it so far. We're up against the wall on this key issue. If you're interested in this topic, come on over and let's talk it through. I think any mode of communication after a while wears thin. And we need to start to look at those that are wearing thin. And we've certainly looked at that in terms of the shop talks, where initially I think they commanded a great deal of interest. And at this point, while they're still valuable, fewer and fewer folks are actually showing up. So are there different ways to bridge that gap, particularly with the AULs and interacting with staff directly? We did a survey on communication strategies a couple of years ago, and it may be time to kind of rethink that in terms of preferences. I personally will go to a wiki if as a last resort. I always, and this is so horrible, I always have to ask Ed, now how do I get into that wiki? I can, but it's just my style. So, yeah.
How do you volunteer for that? That ACRL immersion program you mentioned?
Oh, you're going to have to ask the team about it. Duly noted. Okay. Well, that was just a warm up. So let's move along to Too Cool Phase 2. I was really, really pleased that when Jim Neal, the university librarian at Cornell, can you hear me if I come around to the front? Yeah, okay. And I met with Don Waters last August about we have completed this first phase of funding from Mellon for the Too Cool project, the Too Cool being the Cornell and Columbia University Libraries efforts at joining arms in looking at ways to better serve our respective campuses. That they were very interested in and invited us to submit a second proposal. We characterized the first proposal as, this is a great idea, conceptually strong, and here are some notable kinds of exemplars. But for it to really be a significant, radical way of doing business, it needs to be mainstreamed. And over the next 3 years, that would be the key theme that we will bring to Mellon. We submitted a prospectus to them on Friday, asking for $1.4 million. We'll see what they say to that. But there are four goals in phase two. The first one is A recognition that a lot of the things we will be facing require some capabilities in terms of sharing a technology infrastructure, with the emphasis really being placed on this next generation library management system, which would be a joint one between Cornell and Columbia. We met with three different potential vendors and chose to work in terms of defining requirements with Ex Libris. And so there is a team that is hard at work looking at what they are purporting to begin to offer, tailoring some of that to the specifics of these 2Zs and 3Zs kinds of models that are emerging. And consonant with that will be a review of our technical services policies, practices, and workflows at each of these institutions to look for ways for better alignment, but also to recognize the specifics at each institution which must remain in place. So with a kind of framework of policies, practices, and technology infrastructure, which we hope to have in place by 2014, beginning of 2015, we would start to think about Too Cool in terms of our collective clout, not only in terms of bargaining, negotiating with vendors and third-party parties for services and contents, but also in the key area of use rights in the digital domain. Collectively, there may be more power for us to do that. I think we are seeing some curtailing of use rights in the digital domain that we have enjoyed in the physical domain. I don't know whether Peter Hurdle, our intellectual property officer, would agree with me. Thank you, Peter. But this is a major concern, and one I think in which Too Cool is strongly positioned to offer some pushback. The second goal, which will be to continue to build on the shared collections across these two campuses, but also on top of that are what are some of the emerging and innovative service strategies to support the combined capabilities in terms of resource sharing that we offer. So can we look at new research and teaching support models that would span both institutions? One of the things that caught my attention when we were meeting with Columbia, you know, they also were very interested in sustainability as a key concern academically for them. And they're particularly interested in the resources that the Mann Library offers, agricultural materials. They don't have an ag school. They don't have a vet school. And these are areas where parts of that sustainability, you know, food sources and climate and all those other things that go into these kinds of things become more critical. And so can you think of new ways of identifying a service model for sustainability from a Columbia perspective, for sustainability from a Cornell, and also from the two, you know, Empire Ivy's perspective here. So this is a very much kind of watch the space. We are looking at what's the impact in e-science, but also digital humanities. How does that play in the primary source materials? We are all carefully acquiring and making available. What collectively will that mean for us? The third objective is this issue at the heart of mainstreaming at each institution is to move beyond the, put it bluntly, the cult of personality of the senior administration at each institution saying, we will do this. To have it move more into something that is wholly integrated into the way we do our work, that you wake up in the morning and you think about Cornell University Library, I'm sure you all do, but that you also think about Too Cool as it enhances Cornell University Library, that it's part of just our mindset moving forward. So in that goal, we would look to finalize a governance fiscal and legal structure for the the Too Cool effort that would not be just blessed by the university librarians, but the presidents and provosts at Cornell and Columbia. And that we would engage the entire library staff through new means, active involvement in joint teams and working groups, really expanding the use of communication tools. A lot of travel money is being built into this second grant. The brainstorming sessions idea, how can we throw out an idea that looks at efficiencies, effectiveness, and whatever, and a call to Columbia and Cornell library staff to come together in a brainstorming session. We've also asked Mellon to fund an R&D fund for encouraging Columbia and Cornell staff to submit joint proposals to improve the capabilities that Too Cool could offer. We're asking for $50,000 a year over the next 3 years. We'll see if that maintains its place in the budget. But I think it's a really good idea because it's got a, you know, the sort of groundswell of ownership, idea generation, that sort of thing needs to be, to have some legs to it. Assessment around staff understanding, faculty, senior administration understanding, realignment of job responsibilities in terms of position descriptions and expectations, budgetary transparency, and a routine appointment of subject and domain experts that can maybe work at one institution but serve both campuses. And the fourth goal there would be based on this really innovative partnership between these two institutions to take some leadership in some key areas where Cornell and Columbia, I think, would be uniquely positioned to do that. One I've already kind of mentioned, which is extending digital access and use rights, particularly in the licensing area for joint purchases. Digital preservation coverage. In the last phase of Too Cool, we did an analysis showing that only about 15% of what we make available to our respective communities in terms of e-journal material is covered in third-party digital preservation solutions. That's not okay. Because we've made claims around perpetual access to this material that we need to live up to them. And maybe we move beyond e-journals to e-books and then to e-research data and archive materials. Assessing the prospective overlap in collection building at the research library level, we were surprised to learn that while we have 8 million volumes and they have 10 million volumes, the overlap between the two institutions is only 35%. But my speculation moving forward, as more of our funds go to fewer and fewer publishers and it's for licensed content, the phrase I like, but nobody else likes, is digital hegemony will lead to digital homogeneity. And how do we ensure that as fewer and fewer institutions have the flexibility to collect beyond this digital content that Elsevier and Springer and Wiley and a couple of others are making available, we can continue to build strong comprehensive collections, particularly in the global area, and to be able to document that diminishment. And then the fourth thing would be to promulgate best practices for coordinating interinstitutional collection building. So that's a quick pass through Too Cool next phase. These are a couple of questions that I'm really genuinely curious about your thinking. Are we moving in the right direction by putting our eggs in this basket with Columbia? You know, the faculty are fiercely competitive between these two institutions. Do you feel you have enough information about Too Cool? And if not, how do we support your information-seeking behavior? And is Too Cool something that you see would be of interest to you and would be something where that partnership with Columbia could enhance the work that you do? Barbara.
So one thing I would ponder with the big announcement of the tech campus is to whether Cornell would see a relationship with Columbia as a priority for the library, or saying forget it.
Yeah.
You know, we want to put all our eggs into the campus on Roosevelt Island.
Yeah. It's a very separate thing, although I am coming to the tech campus and the too cool question is one of those.
Okay.
So hold that thought for a minute. Yeah, Greg. All things are possible. You best direct that question to Mary. We do have some folks who work at a distance. As you know, there are some that are related to Man. And Sheen Lee has been in Taipei. I think we need to give careful attention to the idea of where people work and when they need to be here, when they don't need to be here, how effective are they in doing their job, what's the guarantee around keeping in touch with your colleague, keeping in touch with faculty and student research needs, all of those things. But I'm not so wedded to the idea that we all have to live in beautiful upstate Ithaca, New York to do our jobs. Other questions? Comments about too cool. I'm sorry we don't have clickers. Greg? Yes?
I just have one other question.
Where's Mary when I need her?
We have a lot of emphasis on regional economic development. And Cornell seems to be thinking global, but its initial reason for existence was land grant associated with the region. How does Too Cool generate economic, or have they thought about how Too Cool benefits the state of New York? And is that something that needs to be thought through in terms of economic development, good government, blah, 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 but essentially maybe toning down the global issue of what makes a difference to the taxpayer in New York?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that one goes into our objective on partnerships at the national and global, and I think presumed under that is the state mission that we have as well. I think, as Barbara has noted, more of our attention in terms of economic engine development will be directed at the tech campus activities that are going to occupy our minds. But I think it's something that that objective team ought to be thinking through as well. So is there a place that Too Cool has in that function? Certainly. I don't think it is the be-all and end-all of that obligation at the state level or at the economic engine kind of level. Before I move on to the next thing, I just want to show of hands, how many of you think that the library is moving in the right direction by partnering with Columbia? I'm not taking attendance. Okay. Some of these are sideways, like maybe it's a good idea, maybe it's not. Okay. Those of you who didn't raise your hand, see me after class. We'll see. Yeah, just kidding. All right. So let's move on to the next thing, the New York Tech campus. Wow. So there are more things we don't know about this than we do know. If you've gone to the New York Tech campus website, and there is one, there's a lot of sort of publicity around this. I did meet with Mary Opperman last week to talk about the requirements for supporting the academic work at the New York Tech campus in terms of library resources and expertise and services. And, oh, by the way, this report is due to the trustees next week. So, you know, off the top of my head, I was thinking about a couple of things. Mary did inform me that they don't expect there will be a physical library with physical collections there.
as a given. And maybe there was some speculation that all the license arrangements could run through Weill Med. Weill Med, are you listening to this part? And I said, well, that may be true if all we really want to focus on is the medical aspects of the tech campus, that there are many other things that in these sort of disciplinary hubs that they're imagining would not be in the licenses that are maintained by Weill. We certainly think that the opportunities for collaboration with Weill Library, which is just a little swimming distance away from a Roosevelt Island, will be key. So a number of us got together last Monday. I think it was another last Monday. A lot of things came down the pike and started just to think about what are some of the implications, sort of, you know, things on the board that we need to make sure are placeholders as we speculate about serving this new community down there. In 2012, they will admit their first students, but they'll all be Ithaca-based students. In 2013, they'll begin to admit students beyond the Ithaca campus. How many? In 2013, they'll start to tear the hospital down on Roosevelt Island. And in 2017, they will have completed the first phase of construction. This will be a resident campus for those somewhere up to 2,500 students, ultimately, who will be there. And that's about the scope of what we know. I don't think I left too much out. I'm not hiding anything from you on this. So we do know students will be in residence. We have some time. There are ramp-up issues that we will need to address. Oh, and by the way, what's that relationship with Technion all about? Because we start to cross over non-American soil. What implications does that have in terms of access to material? The license arrangements, and by the way, you know, if we're partnering with all of these businesses, what does that do in terms of the academic aspect of those license arrangements? And what do we do if there is no physical library down there to provide on-site expertise? And we clearly see that as a critical element. We also see that if you have a resident campus there are spaces that are going to need to be available for individual and group work. I'm sure that collaborative efforts are going to be key here. And because there's such a strong emphasis on the business aspects here, there are some very costly databases and software that are IP restricted or even terminal restricted, such as the Bloomberg terminals. I can't imagine, even though Bloomberg, you know, bless this, he's going to turn on all of those resources to the world. So all of these things are kind of, you know, in the back of our minds as we develop some response to Mary in terms of what we think will be going on. And also that darn technical environment. Some of that will be within the CIT, the IT at Cornell domain. Some of it will spill over into the library. Some of it will be resident in the respective hubs that get defined. And I can imagine that this being a brand new kind of institution, there are going to be new needs that are emerging. I'm thinking a little bit about the sort of competitive intelligence briefs that might become a more key part of what library expertise brings to the table in this area. Lots of unknowns, but also really kind of an exciting sort of thing that we will be wrapping our minds around. And a couple of questions for you. Do you believe, do you take standing up the assumption that the library can serve this new campus without a physical library or physical collection on site? Martha?
I can say something to that. About 5 years ago...
Stand up, Martha. I can hear you. Sorry.
About 5 years ago, the College of Architecture, Art, and Planning opened a facility in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And as they were opening it, I said to the dean, I think you're going to need a library here. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we don't need a library here. And sure enough, they're sending books and doing that in the car lot frequently. And in fact, they started putting things on reserve. And so, you know, it's Phil, I think they might be asking for information eventually.
Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in on this issue? What else? Gosh, what else? Yeah, what have we forgotten in our quick pass through the issues that we will need to consider, at least at this stage? We're thinking about collections and access. We're thinking about subject expertise. We're thinking about the technology infrastructure. We're thinking a little bit about the facilities related aspects. What happened?
Nothing. You keep going.
Oh. I thought I was being really funny. Funnier than I thought. Any other things that sort of scream out at you that we need to consider, Barbara?
Yeah. Well, I think the main issue that I see is whether this is going to be a financial drain on the Ithaca campus. And I think my recommendation to you is your position as university librarian is to really push hard and stand firm that we don't suffer any more budget cuts as money gets, you know, trapped in New York City. Because this is huge and it's going to cost, despite the huge donation that they got at the $350 million, the resources that the Ithaca campus is going to have to spend on this are going to be enormous.
Mm-hmm. I'm in good company in making that statement. All of your deans, all of your college officers are saying the same thing in spades. And the provost does hear it. And in fact, at the meeting this morning at the Dean's Council, I made something very similar to them. So, and Barbara, you asked earlier, should Too Cool play a role in this tech campus thing? Peter, you're shaking your head.
Sure, we have a physical campus in New York City for the library. It's called Columbia. And the Technion people will be able to use it under our Too Cool arrangements. So very clever of you to get that physical access in advance.
I did ask about, John, you'll be interested, in the issue of license extension to Technion. And he said absolutely not. That as they pay, as they develop courses, there will be fees associated with what they do. So we don't need to worry about co-developing license arrangements with them. So that was kind of a phew sort of thing. Well, this is, you know, kind of mind-boggling to me, and I'm really glad that strong minds within the library are thinking about what this might bring. And Greg, who knows? Yeah, you could be in New York if you only get that sort of ag bent to the tech campus approach. Can you stand up to interject? This might, yeah. I think we will. It's a forcing function for us in a lot of ways, and it may be the case. Greg's comment was more on the tech campus really driving things that need to take place in other other areas, such as in our extension programs that we offer. You know, it may be really the case of the dog wagging the tail rather than the other way around, which is a good thing. A shock, but a forcing function nonetheless. My last topic, and I'm conscious of nattering on too much, really deals with the staff engagement employee survey that was conducted last fall. I did a take one on this. I gave you some of the sort of general survey results. We have asked for and have been promised the specific ones for the library, whether they are in the endowed side or on the state or TUB side, those will be amalgamated. And while we have tracked in some ways staff engagement through other surveys, notably the Climate Qual survey, and it's time for us to be thinking about the next, the repeat of that survey from ARL, I'm most concerned about the impact that the financial crisis has had in terms of the sort of staff faith in the university's response to that to those challenges. While you know the employee results up here have 76 believe their supervisors fairly evaluate their work, that's actually a pretty decent number. I loved 35% feel they can provide feedback on their supervisor's performance, and Lindsay, I think that's a good thing for us to make sure we take into consideration as we look at, you know, that reversal aspect. That's a good point. Over half feel they're treated with respect at Cornell, but we're getting down to issues of trust in terms of communication and staff recognition, and particularly in response to the recent changes. You know, 33% feel the university's responses have helped the university spend money more wisely. I don't know how many of you are thinking of some of the changes in the sort of way we go about purchasing materials or look at software upgrades. 28% felt that those cuts were administered fairly with all sharing the impact. You know, we're staff. It doesn't take too much of a stretch of an imagination to say that, yeah, I think that staff were disproportionately affected by the administrative cuts that have, by the cuts that have occurred. What I'm interested in is what are the results for the library-specific responses here. Mary does tell me that for each of the colleges and large units, these are roughly comparable sorts of things. There may be some that are, you know, vary according to specific things. But I think what we're interested in is, one, getting those library-specific results as soon as possible. I'm hoping by the end of January. It may bleed over into February. And through the Managers' Council, exercising some leadership in ways to acknowledge and address and to get greater clarity around some of the issues associated with staff engagement, specifically as it relates to the library. I also feel that while we have a lot of data we've collected in the past, we have this survey, we have the opportunity for a new climate survey, there needs to be other opportunities for staff to weigh in. You know, in terms of things like, are you surprised by the responses? Do they reflect your personal feelings about working at Cornell? What would make you feel more engaged from here on out? You know, the last couple of years have been tough, no doubt about it, for those of us who are no longer here and those of us who are here. worrying about jobs, worrying about added work that these things mean. But one of the things that I think is the most concern to me is that the erosion of that joy of working at the library, the pride of being here, the sense that we are really doing great work, important work, that makes this university a really distinctive and special place. And there are some, the economic realities are nonetheless real, but there are things, how do we re-engage ourselves in the nobleness of what we do here, as well as understanding and trying to compensate for some of the perceptions that are pretty widely held. So I want to close with those observations and ask you these questions, and particularly how, as we get those results, we can involve more staff in thinking through collectively what to do. I don't want to end on a downer. Yeah, Peter.
I'd like to see we have the staff recognition things every year. I'd like to see something similar for where people can nominate their supervisors.
Hey, what a great idea.
Something like that.
Humane Supervisor of the Year Award, something like that.
Or at least not mean.
Not mean award. I like it. No, that's a great idea. Yeah. Yeah. It is a two-way street there. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Tony.
Dan, I'm just curious in the responses, that middle section, 28% thought money was spent wisely. Now, does that mean that 33% felt that money was spent wisely?
Felt that this helped the university spend money wisely, the changes that had occurred.
So did 67% say no?
Or you got it.
I don't know.
I think it was... I don't know, but probably a large, I don't think so, response. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here, but one thing that I found really surprising and a little discouraging, I don't want to end on a couple of but 62%, only 62% of the staff that Cornelfield are treated with respect.
Yeah.
That's a little troubling. And so, you know, that means 38% of the staff are going off to work each day and sort of muddling through, mm-hmm. not feeling recognized or respected. So that is something that I think perhaps mm-hmm. could be a focus for everybody else, you know, changing that number, bringing it up.
Right. And, you know, there is kind of a caste system here. We know that. Don't tell anybody outside of this room. But there sure as heck ought not to be one within the library system itself. And how do we address those feelings here? Elaine, you had a comment? No? Somebody had their hand up over there? No? Well, I want you to noodle over these things, particularly as we move forward with this latter thing on staff engagement, and it'll be a kind of watch this space. I personally see this as something that I want to commit a lot of time and attention and to thinking through, because you know I think about what a wonderful place this is, and anything that kind of brings that down for me is something that needs to be addressed, and I'm sure many of you feel that same way. I want to thank you all for coming, and thank you for your questions and comments. ARK3, you can write to me anytime you want. So, thanks.
I thought I would just set this back to the